This is Positive Outcomes, a podcast for the P&O community. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Jeff Newell, your host for this episode. We have a special show for you today. Dr. Robert Turcotte, professor of surgery at McGill University and chairman of surgical oncology at the MUHC, joining us to discuss his life and experience with osteointegration. Just to give you a little bit of history about Dr. Turcotte began his career as a doctor at the University of Montreal with fellowship training at both Hôpital Couchin in Paris and then the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota. He's been with McGill and the MUHC since 2004 and made news within the P&O community in 2018 by being the first surgeon to perform an osteointegration procedure in Montreal. Thank you, Dr. Turcotte, for joining me to do this podcast.
Thank you, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, osteointegration, it's an exciting word in the P&O community now. I can remember way back when I first was introduced to it. I went to a mini conference at a facility up in St. Catharines, and boy, I was just wowed by it. It just seemed so way out there, but it's not anymore. It's right there in front of us.
Well, exactly. So for the last, we started, the first case was done in 2018, the beginning of the year of 2018. So since then, we've done a few of these procedures. And so far, we have not regretted it.
So have you done above knee and below knee?
Yeah, we're doing both. We're also open to do transhumeral amputees, so mid-arm amputees. So, of course, the main patient population that would benefit from osseointegration is the above-knee amputee, especially the short one, who are difficult to fit with socket prosthesis. There's also patient with transtibial amputation, which, most of the time do very well with the socket prosthesis, but in some instances, they might have experienced difficulty leading to an indication for osseointegration. But right now, the community needs to understand that osseointegration is a procedure that carries some risk, and albeit the benefits. And it's at the moment reserved for patients who have major issues with socket prosthesis. So people who are difficult to fit, people who have issues of wound, cysts, pressure sores, loss of control, within the socket, volume changes during the day that forces them to kind of build up stockings. And so these are the patients who benefit the most from osseointegration. It's not for the one doing athletic activities, running, jumping, doing heavy workload. This is really for the patient who's severely limited with a socket. And the benefit of the procedure is to relieve the amputee from its socket. And so it gives freedom, it gives the quality of life, it gives the comfort that when you have your stump and present into a plastic, a plastic box, many of the community of amputees will experience some difficulty. So It's not for the ordinary amputee at the moment. It's not to be done primarily at the time of the amputation. It's really with the patient who failed socket prosthesis. And some of the people we address are often having problems more recently. Sometimes they've been amputee for 20 years, they did very well, and suddenly, for whatever reason, they start to experience difficult issues with their socket prosthesis, and despite changes of the socket and trying different type of construct, they cannot find a way to be well-served and very active and very functional with the socket.
Well, how did you become interested and focused on amputations and specialization of bone and soft tissue tumors? Like, what really got you motivated into this direction?
Well, it all started during my training as an orthopedic surgeon in the early 80s. Orthopedic oncology, this is the way we call it, dealing with musculoskeletal tumors, similarly to what experienced Terry Fox, which is a well-known person who suffered from these kind of diseases. It was a new field in orthopedic. There was major advances into endoprosthetic reconstruction, limb salvage, using cadaver bones to reconstruct joints from people. So this was a new field, and there were essentially no one doing it in Montreal. So I became interested into this and did my fellowship in Paris and at the Mayo. Mm-hmm. Now, when you deal with bone cancers or soft tissue cancer, most of the time we are able to save the limb. So amputation are maybe performed in about 10% of people suffering for these type of diseases. And of course, it's also, you know, a necessity for some patient with vascular issues, the chronic infection, post-traumatic injuries. And especially during my training at the Mayo, I became quite kind of aware of the necessity to have a nice stump, you know, to shape a very nice stump in order to for it to be fitted into a prosthesis. And so over the years, I kept an interest, this was not my lead interest. It was more in musculoskeletal oncology. But when I had to perform amputation for cancer or for other reasons, I was very much interested, and also teach my trainees how to perform a good stump that would allow it to sustain, you know, the load and the contact of a socket. So that was my main motivation early on. Mm-hmm.
So I guess this ties into my next question and what interested you in performing this procedure. You know, you mentioned it's very important to have a nice residual limb amputation. And I've seen many amputations that are, you know, you look at them and you just wonder, how am I going to get a socket to fit here? And it makes it so easy, much easier for the prosthetist when we see a residual limb that, yeah, we can take some weight bearing here, we can do this and that. But in some cases, as you, I'm sure you're fully aware, that it sometimes it's very difficult.
Absolutely. And sometimes you have no choice. Yes, if you do, if you have a diabetic foot and you do a below knee amputation, you know, you have the luxury, if I may say, to select the length of the stump to have nice tissue for closure. But when you're dealing with a post-traumatic injury, trying to save some length to the residual bone, you may have to compromise a bit on the soft tissue. You might have areas of skin grafted scars. You may have area of, you know, poorly damaged, muscle and bone. So, you know, sometimes, you have no excuses not to perform a nice amputation with a good soft tissue coverage. But sometimes, you have to make a decision, preserving length to the expense of the quality of the soft tissue resurfacing, and preserving the knee, as you know, is very important. So sometimes we'll take a risk, of dealing with the poor soft tissue in order to save function. And oftentimes it will work. And nowadays, you guys have a lot of techniques, lining materials that you can use to accommodate the poor skin coverage and soft tissue, into the stump. But at the same time, sometimes it makes it more difficult. So it's a challenge in many instances.
Okay. Other than the obvious benefit of osteointegration by not having to have a socket anymore for the patient, what is some of the big benefits you see as a surgeon for osteointegration?
Well, we got interested into osteointegration in the early 2000s. There was a group in Sweden, the Brandmark Group, who started to be known worldwide about their implant they invented and they started to use in amputees. And these were derived basically from the tooth implant, the dental implants, because Dr. Brandmark, the father, the son is better known for integration, but the father is the pioneer into the attachment of metal to bone, and that led to the development of dental implants. So based on that expertise and experience, they moved forward in the late 90s by, operating on some amputees who had major difficulties with socket prosthesis in order to put a metal implant in order to connect it to the directly to the prosthesis. And this implant would obviously be incurred into the bone, but would cross through the skin in order to be connected to the prosthesis. So they start on this, and they progressively develop some experience, some expertise, and this came into the ears of our rehab team in Montreal from the Montreal Rehab Institute, and who connected with me. And in 2002, we spent a week, the whole team, the prosthetists, the physiotherapists, the physical medicine doctor, myself, we spent a week in Gothenburg in Sweden, visited the Brandmark group, and got really rapidly convinced about the benefit of the technique. So, you know, speaking with amputees, speaking, and they had a lot of Kurds following the war in Afghanistan and elsewhere. They had a lot of refugees with amputation. And these people were, you know, very convincing toward us and into the benefit, you know, the relief they got with the osseointegration. So by attending surgery, by attending training of amputees who had the procedure, and by talking to them, we came really, you know, kind of enthusiastic about this innovative procedure. So back to Montreal in 2002, we had a hard time to convince the authorities, the government, the, you know, the workmen's comp, the auto insurance, because in Quebec, it's a public auto insurance society we have that covers car-related injuries. And we came very close over 2 years to, you know, get the okay for tentative 10 cases pilot study to study the efficacy and the benefit of osseointegration. But ultimately, we failed. So at that time, the procedure was very innovative. There was little known in terms of publication, medical evidence, if you wish. And the implants were excessively expensive, very, very expensive. So that kind of killed the project of starting a program in Montreal until about 2015-16, where Dr. Al-Mudaris became popular. So Dr. Mudaris is from Sydney in Australia, mm-hmm. and he trained in Germany. And this is where he came in acquaintance with the osseointegration and went back to Sydney, started, you know, practice. And by the middle of the 2015-16, by his lectures and publication about the experience with osseointegration and its benefit, this led to a new renewed interest, you know, into the procedure. And in 2017, we spent the whole group again, went for a full week in Sydney and attended surgeries, rehab. We met with patients, attended clinics, and so on. And again, we were very convinced of the benefit, but this time we were able, you know, to kind of reach the interest of the healthcare system and started a program quite rapidly. So within 2 years, we had an annual program funded for 50 cases a year. And that's been kind of slowed down, you know, by the COVID, like everything else. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, tomorrow we're doing our 32nd case of osseointegration. Oh,
congratulations with that, for sure.
Well, it's a team effort, you know. I'm a surgeon, but you know, my part is only a small investment into the old take of having an osseointegration. The rehab team is very, very important. Patient selection and training and rehab, these are all very important, including the psychological aspect of every amputee, which may interfere or may help, you know, sometimes by support to go through this procedure, which is lengthy and difficult, but nevertheless, to make it a success, you know, ultimately.
You touched on this earlier as we began our talk about what type of patients are suited for, which type of patients are not. What type of patients then would be contraindicative to any type of this type of procedure?
Well, contraindication, there are some formal contraindication and some more relative contraindication. Let's say the formal would be very deconditioned, very obese, severe diabetes, smoker, severe dysvascular, someone with cognitive issues, especially, you know, post-traumatic syndromes, depression, you know, suicidal mind. There are many psychological and physical conditions that may prevent someone to access an osseointegration. So you need to be, you need to have a physical condition that kind of safely allow for the procedure and the risk it carries. And you need also to have a psychological condition that is suitable for rehab and to move forward, you know, because like I said, it's not an easy process. It takes quite a few months, you know, to go through all this with the rehab and getting back to, let's say, normal life thereafter. So if you're very, very depressive, if you have severe chronic pain, so these conditions need to be addressed before we would consider someone having these difficulties for osseointegration.
You touched on this earlier as well, how that this was a real team effort. It's not just the surgical procedure. No. How important do you feel that the team needs to be in sync, the surgeon, the process, the physio? How important is that?
Well, that's very important, not only to, you know, kind of know the routine and the pros and cons, but, you know, every one of our members are involved in patient selection. So when someone comes to Montreal to be evaluated for his integration, he undergoes a series of evaluation over a half a day, meeting the prosthetist, making sure that the prosthetic fit is optimal for his amputation. Sometimes people have difficulty with socket because they have not tried different type of socket, they have not tried some adjustment on their prosthesis. So we need to make sure that, you know, that they were optimally fitted with their prosthesis and socket. So that's the first thing. The second thing, we need to make sure that there's no obvious contraindication to the disintegration. Either the patient is too fit, doing too well, you know, wearing his prosthesis all day long, very active, can walk, you know, unlimited distance without difficulties, involved in strenuous activities, heavy lifting, heavy contact sports and things like that. So obviously these are contraindication. If you're doing too well as an amputee, you're not a good candidate for osseointegration. The other thing is that we have a neuropsychologist evaluate every candidate to osseointegration just to make sure that their issues are well addressed or minors. Otherwise, we'll refer them, you know, to appropriate support, try to overcome their difficulties, whether it's drug abuse, medication consumption, so on. And before we would consider them to be a candidate. So the potential candidate is thoroughly evaluated to make sure we select those who will mostly benefit from the procedure and its associated risk. So ideally, you know, the perfect patient will be someone wheelchair bound, basically a bilateral above knee amputee, which cannot be fitted with the socket prosthesis or cannot walk. He's probably the best candidate to benefit. He has nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. And we've seen patients like this, you know, it's very spectacular walking without any aids after being wheelchair bound, you know, for quite a few years. So this is the most perfect indication. We've seen also patients with, you know, amputation like an upper arm and a lower limb, or patient with, you know, a paralysis of the upper arm and an above knee amputation. So for them to put the socket prosthesis, the lining, the stocking to adjust the socket, you know, it's quite difficult as opposed to having osseointegration where just with a click, you know, you do and undo your prosthesis, you know. So this is also a major improvement for them that may justify the potential risk, you know.
Sure. What do you see as some of the complications after the surgery has been completed? Yeah. And now you're going to get your patient up and walking. What do you see as some of the complications that may occur when fitting a device?
Okay. Well, there's two types of complications, I would say. First, they're the ones that may occur during surgery. So most amputees are somewhat osteoporotic because many of them are not putting weight on their bone. They sit on their ischium. The weight is carried by the soft tissue more than the bone. So what happens is that the bone is always osteoporotic to more or less extent. So this may lead to a fracture during the insertion of the implant. You know, the implant is kind of press fitted into the bone, so quite tight fit, and we hammer it in. And there's always a risk of having a fracture, like a split into the bone. So that's one thing that one may account. And this may slow down the rehabilitation process. So usually these are minor fracture. They will heal, but we need to kind of slow down the weight bearing over time for the patient. So that's one thing. The second thing that may happen thereafter, after the surgery, is all, you know, everyone is very much aware of the infection risk. So infection is very common after osseointegration. Most patients will experience at least one episode of infection, but these by far are usually minor. So it's redness, a bit of fluid coming out of the stomach through the stoma. People may have pain, maybe a little bit of fever. And most of these episodes will be treated with oral antibiotics and will resolve within a few days. So these are minor events. They may happen. In our experience, it happens usually early on. So the first few weeks or few months after surgery, I don't recall having seen any infection after a year following the procedure. So this seems to be early. And some people may experience multiple, you know, more than one of such infection. More rarely, you may have a more severe infection, let's say with fever, with pus, or sometimes you may have a pus collection under the skin, a little abscess that may require either intravenous antibiotics for a few weeks, or sometimes even a small surgical procedure to wash out, you know, the pus collection. Ultimately, the worst infection is the one that will get to the bone, leading to a chronic infection. And chronic infection are very, very difficult to eradicate and usually would call for removing the implant in order to cure them. And of course, removing such an implant tightly inserted into the femur that has fused with the bone is quite a difficult task. And so this is the major risk, I would say, for the patient with an osseointegration is having a chronic infection that may lead ultimately to the need to remove the implant. Now, what do we know about these chronic infection? I would say that based on the Swedish studies, after 10 years, so if you follow a group of patients with osseointegration for 10 years, we found that 90% of the patient will have retained their implant. So only 10% of the patient after 10 years will have needed the implant to be removed. And in addition to this, about 10% more would show evidence of chronic bone infection. So meaning that 80% of the patients have no bone infection and retain their implant. And half of them who have chronic infection live with their implant, but have a chronic infection. So this is the most major risk someone who has osseointegration is exposed to. Mm-hmm. But by far, the majority retain their implant by 10 years. So that's, you know, and as time goes by, we'll have more numbers, larger series. And also there are different type of implant on the market. So maybe at some point we'll know that one implant is better than the others, whether it relates to infection or fracture or whatever. The other risk you may ask beside infection, which is the most common, includes either fracture. So if you get hit by a car or if you have sustained a significant injury, you may experience a fracture. So the fracture can be through the bone, but most often the fracture, especially for above knee amputees, would be at the hip level, like an elderly. So people with osseointegration may suffer because of their osteoporosis and because of the weakness of the bone, may experience a hip fracture that will lead to a need of a surgical procedure like we do in elderly patients, put a plate and screw, you know, in order to fix the hip fracture. So this is not a very high occurrence, maybe 10, 15% in some series, but this is a significant risk. But usually it's dealt without too much difficulty. The other complication we can see is loosening. So loosening is losing the attachment of the implant into the bone, like the bone didn't fuse to the implant, so the implant will become loose and painful, in which case we will need to replace it, put another one. Other complication that one may say, and not necessarily related to the implant, are the stoma complication. The stoma is the opening through the skin into which, you know, the implant comes through. And some people may experience either pain around the stoma, sometimes because of tightness. If one flexes his hip, the skin, you know, the skin will pull backward when you move your stump upward toward your belly. And this may, in some people, be especially if the skin is quite stiff and not very much elastic, may lead to some tightness or pain that may call for kind of a release of the stoma. The other thing we see sometime over time is that gravity may lead to the soft tissue, the fat and the skin to come over the stoma and the implant and rubbing against the connector. So this is more like a late complication. We try to fashion our stumps quite tight around the opening to prevent this. But if you gain weight, if gravity works against you, you may have redundant skin or, you know, and fat hitting the connectors and causing some discomfort. This is why that sometimes you will see a patient with OI having like kind of an umbrella to support the skin and the fat and to prevent it to come down and touching the rods of the connectors. And the final complication one may see is that in some instances, we need to kind of do another amputation higher up on the limb. This is especially true if you have an above knee amputee who has a long stump we need room to provide space for the connector. If you have a turntable, if you have a knee, if you have the different connector needed to attach to the implant, you'll need about 6 inches, about 15 centimeters to accommodate those connectors and the knee you're having. So if you want the knee to be at the same level as the other knee, sometimes we need to cut the stump higher up. So making a new amputation that would require cutting the bone, cutting the vessel sometime, and even cutting again the sciatic nerve, and which could lead to a painful neuroma like any amputation. So these are the risks associated, because a large part of the procedure of osseointegration is reshaping and trimming, the soft tissue, the muscle, the skin, nerve vessels, in order to provide the best stump to accommodate the implant. So these are about the complication. They're not that frequent, but there are many, and they may occur more than one into the same patient. So this is not an innocuous procedure. So someone who has a significant problem with a socket prosthesis may find the risk acceptable, and most often will be very happy with the long-term outcome. But if you're close to normal and you just like to have no socket and without other good justification, this might not be for you because of the risk involved.
Yeah, well, thank you for being so candid. A lot of these complications you don't hear about when talking about osseointegration. All you hear about is all the good things. And this is, it really is an eye-opener to hear exactly what it's all about and what things you need to consider and not just jump into that without really doing some research. Mm-hmm. Where do you see osseointegration in the up and coming years? Where do you see, how is it going to fit in? Is it going to be something that's more accepted? Is it going to be just the standard way of doing fitting amputees? Where do you see it in the next 5, 10, 15 years?
I think it's there to stay. There's no doubt in my mind. I mean, this is obviously, we are early in the in our knowledge and the type of implant and the surgical techniques. This reminds me of the late 60s when hip arthroplasty started, and the results then were not as good as they are today. The implant was not of the best design. The surgical technique were more cumbersome, if I can say it this way. And refinement over the years of the design of the implant, the material used, the surgical technique, the rehabilitation process too, evolved to make this a very simple procedure, oftentimes done as outpatient, and a very straightforward outcome and predictable result following all these. So I think this will be the same for osseointegration. I think in the next 10, 15 years, the procedure will become more common and more readily accepted either by insurance or, provincial agencies. I think we'll be more open with our experience to include additional patient, additional indication. We do diabetic patient. We do this vascular patient, but, providing some criteria to well-controlled diabetes, patient who are not severely affected by it, and stuff like that. So, and we've done that so far without any significant issues, but we may, open and widen the indication over time. We also at the moment very reluctant to do immediate amputation and osseointegration. I know there's some patient needing an amputation. They're seeking, to have the amputation and the osseointegration performed at the same time. Osseointegration carries its own risk. You should probably try prosthetic fitting with a socket before one would contemplate immediate osseointegration, because if it turns out bad, you may have, you might have been one doing very well with a socket. So, and this is especially true for the below knee patient. Now, I think in the near future, very short femoral stump, so requiring amputation, might be an indication for immediate osseointegration instead of socket prosthesis. As we know that most of these short stump amputees at the thigh will do poorly with a socket prosthesis. So that might be a case where we might be open to consider immediate osseointegration. But let's say for most of the amputees, the mid-third and lower, or the leg, osseointegration might not be the first choice, at least at the moment. But I think the indication will widen over the years. I'm pretty sure of that. I think that the technique is there to stay. It's a technique of the future, and coupled with some electronic, mind control or computerized, arm or leg, this is the way of the future, no doubt.
Okay, and with that, thank you very much for listening to this episode. I'd like to thank Dr. Turcotte for stopping by and talking to us. I found this extremely interesting, as I'm sure you guys did as well. Of course, if you have a show or topic for future episodes, you can email us at positiveoutcomes@ortoped.ca. New episodes are released every other Thursday at positiveoutcomes.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. Positive Outcomes is a production of Ortoped ULC in conjunction with our partners, produced by Jonathan Stone and Frederick Solvay, and hosted by myself, Jeff Newell, and Simon Beals. Thanks again, and take care.